Vigo's having to operate even more attackingly now. He really hits that one. Oh, that is just sensational from Luis Vigo. Goes for goal. Oh, what a goal. Hiratoshi Nakata with a scream.
Can jump straight in. So I guess we are in a bumper back-to-back, two episodes in a week. So we call this episode 9 welcome to the Box to Box episode 9 podcast. And with me today is the cynical Leon Darby. Hello, Leon.
I don't like that introduction, but I'll take it.
And we have the, we stick with Ade calling him the data wizard, but you know, he never goes according to data. Good, yeah, to have you both back on. We've missed Leon. Ade, you've been a regular, but just hit and miss recently. But really good to get you guys at least for half an hour, 45 minutes. Obviously, I have my quiz ready. So get your brains ticking and maybe you'll start to gain some hints and tips during our conversation. On your mind.
Yeah, so my take was, has that German school of thought, Gergen Press, Red Bull school, has it been found out? Is it starting to dry up? The reason I ask is not only because of obviously Liverpool's failures at the start of this season, but just looking across those produced from it, like Thomas Tuchel's out of a job right now. You've got just the recent firing of what Ralph Hasselhoeven. I always forget how to say it. But as I was saying, like, Ralph's gone. Kind of one is Liverpool's struggles. The other is just looking at the managers produced from there. The last point I wanted to make was just looking at teams, how they're adjusting to it. It's not necessarily a case of, like, when I look at Liverpool's struggles or Southampton, it's not a case of, oh, teams are sitting back and waiting. It's more of a case of they're now taking them on. They're taking those teams on and kind of doing their own version of pressing or adapting to it as well. So I just kind of think, has that time come and gone when it's peaked? When it peaked around, let's say, 2020, when you had like three German managers in the Champions League semi-final? Yeah, that was my take.
It's an interesting one because I think I don't know if it's peaked. I think a lot of teams have actually just started to adopt a more pressing mentality. If you look at teams like the team that actually just beat Liverpool the other day, Leeds, they are now like hell for leather with their pressing of teams. They used it effectively against the big clubs now. I just think teams are understanding, I don't know if it's gone, I just think more teams are understanding how to utilize it. And because of the way it's a system that relies on athleticism, work rate, and just consistently being at it for 90 minutes, really closing down your opposition, teams that don't have the better footballers can actually use it to good effect. And what Liverpool are finding out is that their team is probably at the end of their cycle. And this is just personal opinion. I think it's the same thing that happened with Klopp at Dortmund. You can't get players for 7 to 10 years to consistently play and press and play with that style without them burning out. And I just think there's other teams that are rising in their time of doing it and who have the ability to do it and consistently do it. And there's other teams who are fading as their players get older.
Yeah, I agree with you in terms of Liverpool. I think it is the end of their cycle. I look at, like, that midfield is what the average age of it is, over 30. Like, their starting midfield. Like, you're asking Thiago, Henderson and Fabinho to press at a ridiculous rate that I just don't think they have the legs for anymore. And then, but I also, I kind of put it as a take, but I don't, to be honest, I don't necessarily believe that it's, is gone or on its downturn. I just think, to your point, other teams have adapted and taken it on either themselves or added it to their repertoire. So they're just like, so it's just not as unique anymore. It's not as special. And Liverpool have holes. Well, Liverpool, for example, have holes that can just be exploited. And other teams can just utilize it. Like, I look at Arsenal. Arsenal right now, even though I am a fan, is like they are more flexible in the way they press. And like, for example, when they played Chelsea, they pressed Chelsea to death to like get the ball. But against, let's say, other teams, so they can utilize it, especially having a young squad, it's easy to do. But at the same time, they understand, okay, it may not be the case for every game. Whilst for Liverpool, I think it's like the only thing, like it was their thing. It's like that. And now that it's not unique to them, it's not. Exactly. It's like other teams can do it. Also, to your point, that at the end of their cycle, they're on the downturn. And when I look across other teams, like that whole Red Bull system, I'm not sure. It was kind of brought up in like playing more or less that one style. So I'm not sure if, because I don't know enough about what's going on with the other leagues. I just look at the fact, like with Ralph, he was another manager, was high press, gone. But to your point, maybe it's just other teams have utilized it better.
Yeah. I think so as well. I think you're right on the fact that it is a one-dimensional style of playing, and managers from that school, unfortunately, don't. You hit the nail on the head for me. Have the tactical flexibility to change their game when the game needs it. If we look at how Liverpool played, and I you know, I'm using Liverpool as the example because they won the league with it, so it's the best to go on. You would never really say Liverpool have played to dominate games. I mean, or to play to suffocate players by controlling a match in the midfield. Liverpool, always bang, 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 quickly destroy you because they press. They just kill off games quickly and they win. But they're not. This is where the kind of the level difference comes between the styles of Man City and theirs. In terms of Man City, can do that high press if they need to, but they usually don't. They just kill you by keeping the ball. And it's another thing to kind of ask the question as to what is better, an approach where you can be flexible but your game is predominantly based on being more in control of the football than the opposition or killing them, because the demands on players, as Liverpool are showing, to be able to do that gegenpress effectively, consistently, to win you leagues, to win you competitions, it does wane. Whereas you can always get good footballers into your team to try and be the team that dominates the ball.
Yeah.
And wins that way.
No, that I agree with. I also think like prior to, it's like that whole, well, tiki-taka has kind of pretty much gone now. But I think what teams have adapted to is they have a lot more athletic players who could just play that sort of dominant style, as you kind of say, instead of having like Barcelona, Sergio Busquets, he's been on his last legs this entire season. But I look at like his replacements would be a more mobile midfielder who can handle a high press and just or employ it if need be. But to kind of be cush and looking at his notes, I really wanted to challenge him on, was it a fad and has it actually been successful? Now, Adi, I'll let you answer that one first before I get off with my sort of point of view on it.
If we're talking about it being a fad, it might well have been, and that's not out of the realms of possibility because of what has happened in football just as we've known it. Fads in football do come and go. I don't think it's a fad in the sense that it was the stylish thing that managers hopped onto. I just think it was a tactical evolution that bore fruits that a lot of people employ that's going to become saturated, and then there's going to be a new school of tactical thought or a rebirth of another school that was previously used by teams of tactical thought that then becomes commonplace. You know, we've had everything from the Italian style where it was kind of you win games 1-0, what they called it, Catenaccio style. Then it went to, you know, we had, I know there's probably ones in between, but you had the 4-4-2 style. Then you had the tiki-taka style, which was possession, possession, possession. Coming into this style, then Germany went, and it always seems that the dominant nation that employs the fad, so to speak, style the most wins a World Cup, and then the rest of the team start employing it, and then somebody else comes out new with something. Because Germany won the World Cup with this, what is called the fad style, and now it's on its way out, the same as the tiki-taka style made its way out. So I don't think it was a fad. It was just probably an evolution, a tactical cycle that football usually goes through. But I don't know. What do you reckon?
I don't think it was a fad. I think that's to your point. Because for me, this, like, because the question is, like, was it a fad? Was it successful? It was successful in terms of what Liverpool accomplished. And what I look at, like, what RB Leipzig accomplished in terms of where they went from the lower German division all the way to the top, like to the Bundesliga. So I don't think it was necessarily, I don't think it's a fad because teams have been, it's proven to be successful. I just think at times maybe, I'm not sure to speak for Kush, maybe some of it was overhyped at times. Yeah. In terms of like how Liverpool may have been seen in terms of certain lights, but I wouldn't necessarily say it was a fad. I think what was a fad was like some of the stuff around it, like the throwing coach, the like that for me was a bit strange. That kind of stuff I think was faddy, but I think the actual Gergen Press, I think it had a long history besides just what Liverpool have accomplished over the last, let's say, 4 or 5 years. So for me, not a fad. And I think it has been quite successful for certain teams. I think the only problem I see it now is it has, because in sports in general, it's very, to your, you kind of highlighted, one team does very well, like you say, wins a World Cup, and then other teams employ it, they copycat, and then somebody else comes up with something new to combat it. Because right now, I think like, sometimes I watch games, it's very, where it is a bit of an issue I see is like the games are very high risk in terms of the press. Unnecessarily, like teams literally press so hard to try and get the ball upfield. Like once the, if they are bypassed in any way, someone's basically almost straight through a goal. And that is like what, that, and that's what I feel is like the problem in the Bundesliga sometimes is just like, as soon as you bypass that high press, like, you're just straight, you're almost like straight through and no one's like in the opposition, like in the opposition half.
It's true. I think with the pressing stuff, I had a conversation with my friend about this the other day, you know, looking at teams, I keep mentioning Leeds, but looking at teams like Leeds now pressing and all the clubs, you know, towards the lower end of the table, traditionally that you'd expect them to be now wanting to employ a high pressing system. Does it make sometimes for, you know, you would think it makes for crazy games, but it just makes for boring tactical games because it's just tactical battles of managers just trying to outpress the other manager and find ways to get the ball back, but nothing penetrative happening. It's all about squeezing the opposition and suffocating, but there's no construction in how you build up. And I know I shouldn't say this, but does it make people like Conte's style smart in this world, like to what your point is saying, where teams are going to try and press and win the ball, so you work on the percentages that the teams are going to give you that space in behind because they're so high up? And that's why Tottenham, despite them people saying they're having a bad season, still being in and amongst the caps of the top six, you know,
I agree with that because the next note was like, what's next? And you could argue, did Real Madrid win doing that? Sit back, you wait for you. Like, you obviously have to have elite players, but you wait for, like you say, those opportunities. You wait for a Trent to be like in a weird position. He's not in right back. He's weirdly in central midfield. So you know, you just wait for that wide ball, and if you can spring it, you're pretty much through on goal. So.
And true.
I think maybe that is something we might see come back a bit more to your point, like with Conte. I think Madrid kind of employ it when need be. Because, I think as a counter to, like, as we're kind of saying, it's like someone's going to come up with something to counter this besides just copying it completely. And I think, maybe that's the next stage.
I think so too. I think that's a really good point about the Madrid game. And I know that that was probably a discussion they had before the game. Like, we're just going to wait. They're going to be caught out of position. And if you look at the goal, it was wild. Some of the positions that Robertson and Trent were taking up. I mean, you know, and how they weren't seeing the runs. I was just baffled. My friend actually replayed it to me because he was criticizing both fullbacks for their positions all games, and I was having none of it. And then he just showed me, like, look, this is why they lost. And so I think they definitely targeted that. And as unattractive as it is to see the tactic countered that way, it is probably the way that managers will find a way past it.
Yeah, I mean, I look at to your point, the lower teams like Leeds, they'll just adopt the press. They haven't got the quality of players, but they can get the runners. So yeah. I can see teams doing that. Yeah, the top teams could just sit back. I look at, like, PSG might be a team that employ that as well. Neymar, Messi and Mbappe aren't going to exactly press high. But if you sit back and wait, you'll probably get your opportunities. And then, like, the only other team I could think of, like, right now that press really high that I've seen do well is, like, Napoli. Like, well, I was watching the Napoli-Liverpool, even though they lost, the way some of their pressing was, I was like, I couldn't recognize it as an Italian team.
I think that's why they're having so much success. I think they're like, 10 games in one in a row in their league. It's a style evolution over there. It's kind of like when Conte came over here with the three at the back and won the league. It wasn't new, but it was a style evolution that a manager, for some reason, they play each other in the Champions League and stuff, but it's rare to see, you know, wholesale changes being made to styles in leagues. People still try and adhere until there's like a protagonist or an innovator who comes with something different. Teams largely try and adhere to the style that the league requires, and then someone changes the blueprint, and then everyone copies. It's a weird tactical cycle, but yeah, I've seen Napoli now, and they have the players to do it. All their strikers or their front players are young and athletic and relative unknowns who have that hunger, and I think that's an important part of that press, that desire to consistently hunt your opponents, and that's why it's kind of bearing fruits for them. But they will come up against better teams than themselves in the Champions League who are tactically smarter, and I guess we'll see.
Oh yeah, that was kind of it from my point. I guess we lead into yours.
Yeah, so my take was basically on a World Cup, because this one's a bit of a weird World Cup for me. I think since I can remember, I've gone into a World Cup with a team that was the favourite, with a team. And, you know, from a neutral fan's perspective, I've always been excited to see this team play at the World Cup because I just believe they're going to do something crazy. I mean, you know, clearly we've touched and won that World Cup. I think in 2014, I was excited to see them. Spain, when they won it in 2010, I was excited to see them. These were the outstanding favourites. I take it all the way back to, like, 2002, when Brazil had Ronaldo, Rivaldo and Ronaldinho. I was excited to see them, and they were the clear outstanding favourites. And, you know, from those times till relatively recently, there's always been like an outstanding candidate for a World Cup. There's always been a team that the makeup of the squad, it's theirs to lose.
Yeah.
And I feel like this is the first World Cup that we've had in a while that doesn't have a favorite. Like, I cannot see any of the teams sitting head and shoulders above the rest. Today I tried to do some kind of like reading around who the bookies are tipping as the bet for the World Cup. And they're rating Brazil. And it's not that Brazil have a bad squad, but how would I call them? A few people that are soon to be getting their retirement package.
The pensioners.
Yeah.
Dani Alves is of the world. I mean, like, right, I was in secondary school when Dani Alves was in his prime playing for Brazil, so.
You know what I mean? And it's like, I just can't see them as the outstanding favourite. And it's like, has the quality and standard of teams and football overall dropped or has it become just that there's such level ability across nations? I don't know what it is, but I'd like to get what you guys feel and whether you feel there's an actual team that, you know, everyone should look out for, and I'm just being blind.
I agree with you. I don't think there's an outstanding favorite. There's no one. Every time I look at a team, like when they dropped the, to your point, they dropped the Brazil team the other day, it was like, for me, yeah, the back line, I looked at and said, this is old. There's a bit of an old back line. The midfield, I wasn't sure. Like, they didn't seem that creative. They had a lot of forwards, which looked good, but I kind of look at it and go, there's holes in that team. And then I look at, like, Argentina, kind of the same. There's holes in that team. And another key aspect for this World Cup is the injuries that are being picked up as well. So, like, France, they're not even starting with their World Cup winning midfield from 4 years ago. And I just kind of look at everybody's got some sort of issues with their team. So I can't say, oh, this team is ridiculously strong. They're just going to win. It's like everyone seems to have some sort of issue. And then to your point, like no one's like, I guess the team coming in, which also FIFA has simulated will win, is Argentina, because technically they're coming in with the strongest record. I think they're unbeaten in like over 30 games. So they're the strongest team coming in. But at the same time, I kind of look at player for player. I go, okay, there's Messi and there's a few others, but then I kind of still go, this team has some holes to it. And yeah, to your point, I like none of the European teams are like out great to me, and their form and a lot of them, their form coming into this isn't good, particularly good either. So, I mean, Argentina on paper, I mean, right now, Argentina and Brazil are the teams, sort of people are saying, but to your point, I don't think there's a clear favorite.
There's, it's a weird one because, you know, Argentina on form, but Argentina strike me as a team that could easily be got at. Argentina, yeah. I don't know if Messi's going to go to this World Cup. If he is, fair play, that's added, but he's not the Messi of old. He's going to need a very good team around him. And I couldn't name you 10 Argentina players that are shoo-ins for the World Cup. You know, and usually, you know, a team that is favourite for the World Cup, you know the majority of their players inside out. Okay, maybe that's because a lot of them didn't play in the Premier League. But even still, I couldn't name you, you know, the strongest Argentina 11. It's a weird one because I think to myself, I thought, oh, what about Belgium as well? But the thing is, Belgium, I think they didn't seize that golden period they had. And I think they may just be over the hill with their generation of players that was a really good nucleus to try and challenge. And I feel like, is there another team that's going to come from somewhere unknown, like kind of like Greece did in that Euros? Some years back now, and just take this World Cup by storm, because it's one of the most open ones. And I think that if I was like a Mexico or something like that, I'll be licking my lips at basically saying any of these top teams can be got at. I think this is probably going to be England's best chance of winning a World Cup if we're looking at strengths of squad.
Good.
Because dare I say it, they're one of the better squads.
They are, but they're coming in with terrible form as well. That's the only thing. Like, to your point, England on paper should be one of the favourites, but the form and the way they're playing doesn't speak of it. Like, they should make it out of the group, but I wouldn't be surprised if they went out in like the round of 16. That wouldn't shock me. The way coming in to this World Cup, just off the form.
Wow.
But to your point, this could be the best opportunity. Because I don't know, with the World Cup, it's just like, it just needs to click when you're there. And like, once you click when you're there, it can just go through.
Yeah.
You mentioned like Brazil in 2002, they weren't actually favorites coming into that World Cup. France and Argentina were. And both of them were out in the group stage. I think Brazil in the lead up to that World Cup weren't actually playing that great, but it just clicked when they were there and they won. Italy 2006, they weren't favorites. Yeah. clicked when they were there.
France were the favourites.
Clicked when they were there. To your point, Spain 2010 were favourites. Germany 2014 were favourites. I don't know who was the favourite in 2018. Can't remember.
I think they thought something like Messi was going to do his bits at that World Cup, but France were kind of the strongest squad. They had a ridiculous squad for that time.
Yeah, I agree on that one. But now, to your point, it's like, I look at the form, Argentina, like I said, form-wise coming in, yes, but to your point, the squad, that could be got at. And kind of looking through Chris's notes again is... he's brought up the Belgium KDB debate.
Yeah. Well, that was a debate I kind of had. And, we touched on Belgium earlier. I had a discussion with some of my friends this weekend. And they raised a point. And, you know, this might actually be something that we have to look at Belgium and try and potentially see how true it is. But they said to me, Kevin De Bruyne, when you compare him to the great players of his generation, if you take him out of the Manchester City system, he is not as effective. He's not effective. He needs to play in that Guardiola system where he can play ghost balls, where he knows where people are going to be because they're so rigid and drilled in terms of their positional play with Pep, that when you take him out, he doesn't have the footballing mind or intelligence to take a game by the scruff of the neck and dominate. And obviously Belgium, I don't think they're favourites for this World Cup, but I totally disagree with that opinion. I think Kevin De Bruyne is one of those midfielders that you can drop into any squad because his game is not about individual flair or brilliance specifically. His game is the perfect type of player to knit. He's like the evolution of a number 10, the perfect midfielder that can contribute in all phases of play. But then at the end of the day, his impact for Belgium is not as strong as it is for Manchester City's, which potentially makes me think, apart from his Wolfsburg days, are they correct?
I'm going to say they're wrong. Because for me... I don't know. I get the system argument. I've had this discussion before on KDB. But this was like, I had a friend who said something where, because of the fact that he was injured one season and Man City still won the league very easily. And it was kind of like, oh, they can win it without him. But I was like, yeah but I mean, that doesn't mean he's not a good player, not a great player. What it is just that City, the way they are, they rotate very heavily their squad. There's not really, or how I say this, they're so system driven as well that there's no, don't get me wrong, if he's off form, you'll never know because they'll still be winning. But at the same time, I'm not going to suddenly turn blind to what I'm seeing. There are certain passes that Kevin De Bruyne does that people aren't doing. I'm sorry. And at the end of the day, you can say, okay, yeah, oh, it's this system. But I'm like, I'm seeing Kevin De Bruyne spray like a 40, 50 yarder that I'm just like, he's the only player I know with the confidence to try that pass. And I just think I still think he's a world-class player. Don't get me wrong, his effectiveness may not be as big if he left City. I agree, because the system, like he's had times where he's been off form and it's not mattered. And don't get me wrong, if he went to like another team where it's less system based and it's more dependent on him driving it, I think then, yeah, maybe he might be slightly less effective. But at the same time, I can't prove that. From what I've seen, well, player. And the Belgium point, I kind of look at that Belgium, to your point, like they had their period where they could have won, I think, like 2016 Euros. I mean, they went out to Wales, I think. That was, I think, a low. 2018, I think people something really like understand. That, yeah. Like 2018, they made the World Cup semi and only went out on a single goal. Like, I think that was their peak, if you want to say when they could have won. But if you compare, like, his international or that Belgian team to, like, other great teams in the past, they've done pretty well. It's just they didn't win. And I think, like, they've never been, I would say the Wales 2016, that was bad. But like barring that, they've never really been embarrassed in terms of how they've gone out. I mean, the last Euros, they went out to the eventual winners. And like, I also look at another key thing with Belgium, and I can't say this enough for international football, the quality of managers is not great.
That's, I think, the problem where they shot themselves in the foot.
I look at the system they play, I then also look at some of who he's playing with. Like, if you look at that Belgian team since 2018, a lot of people have dropped off a cliff edge. Hazard, I don't know what, Thorgan is the only Hazard I know now. The back line is old and decrepit. Like, everybody that was there that was at their peak has gone. Who else is like at Lukaku was there for 5 seconds and now has dropped off a cliff edge. And I just look at it, it's like, okay, so you've got KDB's really the world-class player left and everybody else has just either lost form.
I think in terms of managers, definitely it's true because I don't think Roberto Martinez was that guy to lead them. I think he was definitely not the person that we that Belder was coming from losing his job at Wigan. You have players like Vertonghen, Nasser Chadli, and all of those players who were an effective part of the team that you're talking about that, you know, went close at certain tournaments, but I think they ended up losing to Wales because of tease, where they could have got a better manager who was going to get them over the line. But now KDB is their only good player, but he's going to be less effective in that team because he doesn't have people running into the spaces. To your point on KDB's ability and his passes and spraying the ball, I watched this video that basically showed me that Kevin De Bruyne could be 70 assists up if Gabriel Jesus and Sterling were better finishers because of some of the balls he's played, and they were absolutely out of this world. So that's why I totally disagree. I think if you get him into another team, you would eventually have to create your system around him or make sure he had the runners because he can find you. Or players will quickly, the better players will quickly twig that this guy's going to find me in certain positions that others can't if I make that run. So I think he'd work, but I do hope he leaves Man City for at least a couple of years so we can see if the problem is he would have probably peaked before he leaves, before they let him leave. So, but yeah, it's an interesting one. I just kind of wanted to get your take on that around the World Cup subject. And I'm still going to try and put my money on somebody for this World Cup. And I think my outside bet, it's not an outside bet, but yeah, my outside bet is probably going to be, I'm just going to say Mexico to be controversial.
If I put money down, I'd put Argentina, but I feel like it would be fool's gold. But yeah, barring that, like outside bet, I'm trying to remember who's there. Outside bet, I would say...
I can read through. You've got Qatar, Ecuador, Senegal, Netherlands, England, Iran, US, Wales, Argentina, Saudi, Mexico, Poland, France, Australia, Denmark, Tunisia, Spain, Costa Rica, Germany, Japan, Belgium, Canada, Morocco, Croatia, Brazil, Serbia, Switzerland, Cameroon, Portugal, Ghana, Uruguay, South Korea.
I'm going to be controversial. My controversial outside is South Korea. To your point, you're naming off the list, and I was like, yeah, there's some big teams, but there's so many holes.
Like, yeah.
When exactly. You name like Portugal, you're just like, yeah, but I'm like, if they drop Ronaldo, maybe, and they switch manager, but that's not going to happen.
But they're not back to front, solid, sure bets that you're like in every position through their spine. There is an absolute world-class top of his profession player where you could have done that in other teams, or at least said that they're in their strikers. They've got three of those, which will account for it. There's no team that has that. France is always the squad that typically has that pool of talent, but this is the first time where I don't think this France squad is even as, you know, is anything to write home about. So, but it makes it even more interesting. I think every game is going to be interesting because of that, because you don't know who's going to win. It's going to come like the EFL championship. So,
yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, I think That is basically our points, or at least almost 45 minutes. And Kush has gone with all the quiz questions. So essentially,
yeah, might call it a day.
Call it a day.
Yeah, well, it's been good speaking to you. And yeah, hope.
Vigo's having to operate even more attackingly now. He really hits that one. Oh, that is just sensational from Luis Vigo.